good afternoon to everyone who's on the call today. Today we have a really special and very excited to have Bob Bloom today on our call. So for those of you who don't know who Bob is, Bob is actually a national leader for the past 29 years in asset protection, legal entities, tax strategies. Bob's specialty is actually working with U.S. real estate investors and Canadian investors. His strong suit actually is to help investors protect them in the event of a lawsuit, and actually gives them the greatest tax benefits when it comes to their taxes. So if today you have any questions about the new tax codes or about entities or anything, Bob is your man, and he's the one you need to be on the call with and ask those questions. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Bob Bloom.
Well, thank you, Jermaine, and thank you, everyone, for being on the call today. As Jermaine mentioned, my name is Bob Bloom. I'm a licensed attorney in the state of Texas. And now, just to update things a little more, I have been practicing for over 30 years now. I've set up thousands and thousands of companies and limited liability companies, limited partnerships, trusts, and et cetera, many other types of entities for people over the years. I am considered an asset protection attorney, and that touches on several areas, including tax and including some estate planning as well. But primarily, we try to protect people from lawsuits by structuring them in such a way that they are protected in the event of a lawsuit. But what that really means is that if you're well protected and the plaintiff knows ahead of time that even if they sue and win, they won't get anything, then the incentive for suing is pretty low, if not zero. So, I mean, what's the point of going to the trouble of suing if you know you're not going to get anything in the end because the person is so well protected? So that is really the goal. I don't do litigation. I was a litigator for many, many years and too many years, and I got out of that as fast as I could because it's the biggest waste of time I've ever seen. It's after the fact, and so I now think it's a whole lot more productive to protect people and prevent that kind of a mess in the first place by correct entity structuring. We're going to really focus today on limited liability companies because the limited liability company has become the entity of choice for real estate investors. And just to give you some quick background, limited liability companies were first created in 1977 in Wyoming. And that means compared to traditional corporations, which have been around since the 1600s, limited liability companies are quite new. And so the law has developed very rapidly with regard to LLCs. They are designed to combine the best features of a corporation and the best features of a limited partnership. So that is primarily why it provides limited liability, because a corporation can provide some limited liability, but a limited partnership provides very significant liability. And it combines some of the tax aspects of a corporation as well. One of the advantages of an LLC is that there are fewer formalities than with a traditional corporation, which makes it easier to operate. It is much more difficult to pierce the veil of a limited liability company than a corporation because of the fewer formalities. And the lawsuit protection of an LLC is in many respects as good or in some states better than a limited partnership. In other words, if you've ever heard of a charging order or charging order protection, which we will go over in a little bit, the charging order applies to a limited liability company as well as a limited partnership. The other one of the other big advantages of an LLC is tax flexibility, and we're going to go into that in a little bit more detail. And it is the entity of choice for real estate investors for these many, many reasons. Now, the good news is that a properly structured LLC can do a lot of good things for you. First, it can lower your taxes, it can protect you from lawsuits, and it can protect you from IRS audits as well. But sadly, most limited liability companies don't lower your taxes, they don't protect you from lawsuits, And most limited liability companies do not protect you from IRS audits. And you would wonder, well, why not? Isn't this automatic? And the answer is, I wish it were automatic, but it's not. Because just giving an insight, most LLCs are not going to protect you from taxes because they have not made the correct tax election. In other words, they haven't chosen the correct tax method, and oftentimes there are no documents that give you certain resolutions and the right to take certain deductions. Second of all, the limited liability companies, most LLCs rather, don't protect you from lawsuits because people tend to use cookie-cutter documents that are the same from one person to the next. They found them on the internet. There are no keywords. They have to supporting documents, specifically the operating agreement and other documents that make up the LLC, must be customized to the particular individual and even to the particular deal. And then most LLCs don't protect you from IRS audits because the limited liability company documents don't authorize the deductions that the IRS is looking for. Now, since we're talking about the IRS and taxes, let's go back to that point I made a little while ago that you have much greater tax flexibility with a limited liability company. The reason is, in a traditional corporation, you have two choices. It can be an S corporation or a C corporation, and most of you have heard of that. In an LLC, you have four choices, double the number in a corporation. You have everything in a corporation, so you could have your LLC taxed as an S corporation. You could have your LLC taxed as a C corporation. But beyond that, you could have your LLC taxed as a sole proprietorship, and you can have, or you, I should say, you can have your LLC taxed as a partnership. Every one of these has different tax benefits in different situations. And so it's not fair to try to generalize and say this one particular method is always the best, because that is not the case. It's going to depend upon the individual deal and facts of the deal and participants in the deal. Now, under the new 2018 tax law, which became effective January 1st of this year, there is an automatic 20% tax deduction for what is called pass-through entities. This is under Section 199A of the Internal Revenue Code. Now, a pass-through entity is three out of the four ways that the LLC can be taxed. In other words, a pass-through entity is an S corporation. A pass-through entity is taxing the LLC as a sole proprietorship, and the LLC would be a pass-through entity if it were taxed as a partnership. In other words, the only way that the LLC would not be a pass-through entity is if you had chosen to tax it as a C corporation, and under very few circumstances would we ever, with respect to real estate, use an LLC taxed as a C corporation. For title holding entities, in other words, if your entity is going to hold title to your real estate, it should be one of the three pass-through entities, which would be an LLC taxed as an S corp or as a sole proprietorship or as a partnership. That will give you an automatic 20% tax deduction off of taxable income, which is just a terrific tax deduction. That law was designed to help small business owners, and I assume that's everyone on this call. Now, the other great aspect of an LLC is that it provides superior lawsuit protection, far better lawsuit protection than a corporation ever could. And the reason is because of something called a charging order. A charging order is the remedy that the winner of a lawsuit receives for winning the lawsuit. In other words, a remedy in medicine is something designed to make you well or make you whole, to restore you to health. And in the lawsuit, the concept is very similar. If someone was in an accident and they suffered a $500,000 loss, as a result of the accident, then the remedy would be to recover $500,000 from the person who caused the loss, and that would make the person whole, presumably from a financial standpoint. So the remedy is in a normal situation without an LLC, without a charging order, if you own real estate, let's say worth $500,000, maybe it's a 2, 3, 4, 5, 6-plex, something, small apartment building, and it's all paid off, worth $500,000 of equity, and you are sued, and that property is in your name, potentially they could take that property worth $500,000 to pay the $500,000 judgment. All right? By contrast, when the property is in a limited liability company and you are a member of the LLC, that's the same as a shareholder of a corporation. That means you're the owner of the LLC, and you are sued personally, the remedy is a charging order. In other words, the winner of the lawsuit gets a charging order, and the charging order says they're going to receive three things. They're not going to receive $500,000. They can't seize the property from you because the law says, under charging order law, that none of the assets in the LLC can be seized to pay the judgment. So the assets are protected in the LLC. Zero assets come out of the LLC. The other good thing is if the LLC is drafted correctly, zero income comes out of the LLC. In other words, they cannot take any of your rents, any of the income that you would otherwise derive from the LLC. They get zero. And then finally, under certain circumstances, if you have done this correctly, even though they've gotten no assets, they've gotten no income, they have a $500,000 judgment, which they couldn't recover, they would still have to pay income taxes on the $500,000 you never gave them. That is a charging order, and that is a very powerful protection built into a limited liability company. And that is found in every one of the state statutes that authorize an LLC. So it is state law, statutory law. Now, in order for the result I just told you, they get no assets, they get no income, and they have to pay income taxes on income you never gave them, that only happens if the LLC is properly drafted. And what I specifically mean is the distribution terms must be very carefully defined. In other words, it could be either a pro rata distribution or a non-pro rata distribution. It could be a mandatory distribution or a discretionary distribution. And only one combination of those is the correct way to have this LLC drafted. Now, so in other words, a limited liability can protect you for your assets from a lawsuit if it is structured properly. And I want to emphasize that not all LLCs are the same, because the problem is people can say, well, you know, I have an LLC. Well, that's great, but it's similar to saying I have a house. And that tells you absolutely nothing about the house. It just means you're not renting in an apartment. It could be a $3 million house, or it could be a $40,000 shanty that you're living in, which we're calling a house. You could say, I have a car, but that doesn't tell you a thing about the car. It could be, you know, a McLaren or a Rolls Royce, or it could be, you know, a junker that's on its last legs. So, you know, your LLC is very, very similar to that. It describes nothing. It tells you very, very little about the LLC. So we could analogize putting an LLC together or building an LLC to building a house, and because it goes through certain steps. So when we build a house, we start with the foundation. And then we go to framing the house, and then we go to, you know, putting the roof on and the sheet, you know, the outside of the house. Then we, you know, put the doors and the windows in the house and kind of button it up. And then if it's all, you know, closed up for the wintertime, you can work in the winter on the interior, doing the plumbing, the electrical, finishing out the interior, putting up the drywall, the mud, putting in the flooring. And then finally, after all those steps, And they must be done stepwise, by the way. You finally have a real house that you can be proud of and that you can live in. And putting together an LLC, structuring an LLC, is very, very similar because we have to go through certain steps. So if you're writing these down, which I would encourage you to do, let me give you some of the steps that we consider when we're working with people in setting up their LLC, because we go through a consultation process and discuss every one of these points because they're all critically important. In other words, we want to set up an LLC. How many members will be in the LLC? In other words, how many owners will there be? And the problem is that one particular type of LLC gives you no liability protection at all, and it is called a single member LLC. In other words, there's only one owner of the LLC. One person is listed as a member of the LLC. That is a single member LLC. In 47 of the 50 states, single member LLCs give you no liability protection whatsoever. Now, you may be thinking, well, then just tell me the three states, and I'll be glad to. It's Nevada, Wyoming, and Delaware are the three states which by statute have ruled that the single-member LLC will protect. Now, you may say, well, then great. I'm just going to set up in Nevada, Delaware, or Wyoming, and that's where I'll set up my LLC, and then I'm going to own real estate in Virginia or Massachusetts or Ohio or Georgia or wherever it may be, wherever you live, and that's wherever you're investing. The problem is, let's say you have a slip and fall on your property in Ohio, okay? Ohio law is going to apply. And when it comes to the operation of the limited liability company, there is only a very minimal, very slight benefit with regard to the state of filing. But let me just say this. If Ohio doesn't recognize single-member LLCs, then it doesn't matter that you've filed in Delaware, Wyoming, or Nevada, because Ohio will apply Ohio law. And if Ohio law says, which it does, that single-member LLCs do not provide any liability protection, then you have no liability protection, regardless of the fact that you set up in those states. Where those states become a real benefit is this. If you are going to invest in Wyoming, Delaware, or Nevada, great. Then set up your LLC in one of those states in which you're going to invest. But otherwise, it's really not going to do you much good because it'll be the law of the state where the property is located that's going to govern in the lawsuit. All right, so single-member LLCs do not give you liability protection. Roughly 60% of all LLCs set up are single-member LLCs, which means there are a lot of people hanging out there who think they're protected, but they are simply not. In other words, if they sue you, they will cut right through the LLC, gives you no protection, and they can seize your personal assets. All right, now, the next step, who are the members? We've already established we want more than one member, so who will that be? Oftentimes, that's a husband and wife. If it's a couple who are investing, it could be two business partners, two, three, four business partners all going together. Who are the members? It could be, as I mentioned, you and your spouse, you and your kids. It could be you and a corporation. It could be you and a trust or you and another LLC. So there are ways, if you are just the only person that you're in that is going to do the investing, there are ways to still make it a multi-member LLC, even though you're the only natural person. Well, go to the next step. We've talked about how many members should there be, more than one. Who should be the members? That depends on who you are and who you're investing with. Well, who should manage the LLC? And the short answer is it really should be manager-managed as opposed to member-managed. Those are your two choices. And the reason I say it should be manager-managed is because a member who is not a manager is considered a passive investor. That means the income that will go to the passive investor is not subject to self-employment tax, which is roughly 15.3%. So the non-managing member can save, or let's put it this way, get a 15.3% tax cut. Now, the manager is considered to be the active member. And as a result, they do not escape the 15.3% self-employment tax. But if a husband and wife are investing together and the one is the non-managing member, it can really be a benefit to the couple. And if you are bringing in investors, you can count that as a point that their income is not going to be subject to self-employment tax because of the way you have wisely structured the LLC. Well, the fourth step is after how many members should there be, who are the members, who should manage the LLC. Well, then the next question is, how should the LLC be taxed? We want to make a tax election. Remember, it could be taxed as an S corporation. It could be taxed as a C corporation, which we're not going to do because it's not a pass-through entity. It could be taxed as a sole proprietorship, or it could be taxed as a partnership. And there are, once again, pluses and minuses to each one of these. But overall, there are some very significant tax benefits to being taxed as a partnership. And for those of you who are bringing in investors, that by far is the way you would very likely want to be taxed, is as a partnership. Well, the fifth question is, are there supporting documents for the limited liability company? And when we're talking about supporting documents, we're talking about, is there an operating agreement? And I mean a customized operating agreement, not one that you got from LegalZoom, not one that you got off of the internet somehow, or you cut and pasted together. We're talking about an operating agreement that is customized to your particular deal and your particular investors. Is there a capital account ledger? Are there meeting minutes? Are there minutes of the manager's meeting, minutes of the member's meeting, organizational meeting minutes? Are there resolutions that provide for opening a business account that authorize you to purchase real estate, that authorize you to do this, to do perhaps deduct educational expenses? All of those resolutions are critically important. And then we go to a very important stage, which is, are there key words in the operating agreement? Is it a mandatory distribution or a discretionary distribution? Is it a pro rata distribution or a non pro rata distribution? And that is just one of the terms. Those are distribution terms that must be very carefully defined, and there would be other very important terms, keywords, which control whether you keep or lose your money. Very, very important. So when we go through these many different steps, putting together a properly structured limited liability company, you now have a limited liability company that will lower your taxes, that will protect your assets, that will protect you from IRS audits as well. Now, one of the things I want to caution people against is, too often we see people who have simply gone to the Secretary of State website. Someone told them, you can just go to, whatever it is your state abbreviation, space SOS. That's the Secretary of State website. You can fill out a form online and you've got an LLC. Well, you've got the beginning of an LLC. If we analogize it to a house, you have the slab, you have the foundation for an LLC, but you can't live on a slab. And an LLC, articles of organization, which is what you're going to have, will not protect you from lawsuits. It will not lower your taxes. It will not give you IRS protection from an IRS audit. So the problem is, people really have that misconception that going to the website for the Secretary of State, filing the articles, gives them some kind of LLC. Well, it does establish the LLC. It begins the LLC, but it's one or two pages. And how do you expect one or two pages to give you all the protections we talked about? Because they're very, very sparse pages. You want to know what the articles of organization ask? Typically, in most states, and some states are more intrusive than others, but most of the time, they're going to want to know, what's the name of the LLC? Is it manager managed or member managed? What's the address of the LLC? Who is the registered agent, and what's the address of the registered agent? And that's it, folks. And that kind of information alone is not going to give you the kinds of protections that we've talked about here and the kind of protection that you expect from a limited liability company. So one of the things that we do on a regular basis is we examine existing LLCs and restructure them properly so that you do have the protections of lowering your taxes, the protections of protecting your assets, and the protections from IRS audits. So if you are not sure, when you set up your own LLC, and if you're not sure it's really going to give you the protections that you need when push comes to shove, then by all means, have someone take a good look at that LLC, because that is your line of defense when the chips are down. All right. So that is the material that I had prepared for you on limited liability companies today. Once again, it has become the entity of choice for real estate investors. It's a terrific tool, wonderful tool that can be used for holding title to real estate, giving you protection, protecting your real estate from your liabilities as well, and protecting you from the liabilities that might arise from owning real estate as well. So terrific tool. And I encourage people to learn more and more about LLCs whenever you have the opportunity to do so. So let's open up the floor for any questions you may have, and I'll be happy to answer anything I can.
Operator, do we have any questions? Excuse me. She's probably collecting them right now.
Okay.
Okay, for the first question?
Sure. Yes.
Our first question comes from Gene. Gene, please state your question.
Hi there. Thank you for that. That was very informative. I mostly invest in Baltimore, and there is some lead paint laws that are there. So, I heard about the single member LLC. How would one structure that if, like, as I mentioned, I'm a single individual investing, I was told you want to set up like a LLC in Wyoming and have that be one of the other members of the LLC that is purchasing the properties.
Yes, that can be done. And in other words, we can structure another member or find another member by creating another LLC. So the members then would be you, Gene, a natural person, and then the Wyoming LLC, or any other LLC for that matter, doesn't have to be in Wyoming, but because you would be a single member LLC, Wyoming is a good choice, and that Wyoming LLC would be the second member of the LLC. You now have a multi-member LLC, and you would have a much more protective LLC than simply a single member LLC alone. So that, once again, covers that very first step. How many members should there be? And that's a good way to solve the problem, Gene.
Oh, okay, thank you. And then then going with the Wyoming LLC, is it similar to Nevada where they do not disclose who that member of the LLC is? That's the reason I would choose
correct.
Wyoming? Okay.
Yeah, that is correct. Now, Nevada has changed, and it used to be that Nevada did not disclose or was a non-disclosure state, but that has changed, and Nevada asks for all kinds of information. They ask for an initial list of officers, and so they have become much more disclosure-oriented than Wyoming or Delaware is. Wyoming and Delaware are bare bones. They just want to know what's the name of the LLC, what's the name of the registered agent. Your name would never appear on the LLC articles of organization in Wyoming or Delaware.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Just my last question. How much do you charge to set up an LLC?
Oh, just work with REI Mentor and the RE Mentor. Those guys are great, and they can help you with all that. Okay?
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You bet. Any other
questions? Our next question comes from Mike. Mike, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I missed a part of your answer there, but I think I got the answer. Is can an LLC, a parent LLC, be a member of your individual property LLC?
It can be a member of the LLC, yes, and it could also be a manager of the LLC, and that could be a good structure, especially if you're trying to avoid single-member LLC status. But one question Go ahead.
I have five rental properties that I'm going to be putting in LLCs, and then I was going to have a parent LLC over that. That would be investing in other properties, et cetera, et cetera. Would that parent LLC then be the managing partner of the local LLC?
Well, it certainly can be, and that's a good structure because the parent LLC, and one of the things you want to always define is what is the function of that particular LLC? What do you want it to do? And obviously, one of the functions of an LLC would be to hold title, but not for the parent. You would not want the parent to hold title. You'd want to keep that pristine because there would be no liability in the parent if it doesn't hold any real estate. So it could manage. It could be the manager of all the other LLCs. It could also be the owner of the other LLCs. And there is a particular structure that is a little too complex to describe on the phone, but it would allow you to use the parent as a holding company and be the 100% owner of each one of the title holding LLCs. The advantage to that is those title holding LLCs would then be single member LLCs, and you would think, well, wait a minute, you just said don't be a single member LLC. And that's true. Don't be a single member LLC if you are the single member. But if the single member is a multi-member LLC, which could be the parent, then that parent is going to provide charging order protection for the single member LLCs. And then the advantage is that those single member LLCs can be considered disregarded entities, taxed as sole proprietors, and they are not required to file a federal tax return. So if you're a prolific real estate investor, and let's say you've got 5 or 10 LLCs with perhaps 50 properties, none of those single member LLCs would have to file federal tax returns, which saves a huge amount of operating cost. Does that make sense?
Only
I'm sure I confused everybody.
Only the parent LLC would do that?
Yeah, only the parent LLC, because it's a multi-member LLC, would have to file the federal tax return. Mm-hmm. So there are some really significant advantages to using a combination of multi-member and single-member LLCs, but they've got to be structured properly in order to accomplish those goals.
Okay, yeah, that's really helpful.
Good.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you.
I hope I didn't confuse everybody with that, because I've got a picture in my mind, but it's difficult to describe in words.
No, I think that was.
Was that okay, Mike?
Yeah, that was good. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Next on the line, we have Tracy. Tracy, please state your question.
I'm a newer student, and I have a question about setting up LLCs for each deal. How necessary is this, and can you speak to, are there any exceptions to that rule?
Let me say that is not the rule. And I'm glad you asked that question, Tracy, because this is a very common misperception. You'll hear a lot of folks out there who have a very tentative grasp on all this material say you put one property in one LLC. Now, the principle they're trying to get at is that if you had five properties in five separate LLCs and there were a slip and fall on one of those properties, the slip and fall and the lawsuit would be isolated to just that one property. And the other four properties and the other four LLCs would be completely unaffected by the lawsuit against the one LLC. That's the principle that they're trying to get at. Now, to dig deeper, it is overkill and not the rule that one property goes in each LLC, because the real question is how much equity is in each LLC. And that is really going to be a subjective decision based on a bunch of different variables. And let me give you an idea. Let's say, Tracy, that somebody has a $10 million net worth and they have a property with only, you know, $20,000 of equity, just a down payment. Well, you know, first of all, nobody's going to sue you for $20,000. I mean, they're not going to go after you. That's just not enough money to mount a lawsuit against, okay? So that one property can go in the LLC. That's fine. But what if you had five properties, each with $20,000 of equity? Well, now you have $100,000 of equity because those five properties are in the one LLC. Now, is that okay to have $100,000 of equity? Because if they sued the LLC because of a slip and fall on one of the properties, they could take everything in the LLC. All right. Now, you maybe are thinking, well, wait a minute, Bob, you just said that everything's protected in the LLC. I gotta backtrack for just a minute. There's a difference between an inside versus an outside lawsuit. You are beautifully protected the way I described with a charging order if you are sued personally and they're trying to get your assets in the LLC. They get nothing, and they got to pay taxes on income you never give them. They get a charging order. So that's called an outside lawsuit because the harm occurred outside of the LLC. In other words, you were in a car accident. That has nothing to do with the LLC. By contrast, if you have, let's say, the five properties in the LLC and there's a slip and fall on one of the properties due to your negligence, then they would sue the owner of the LLC, the owner of the property, which is the LLC, and they can now take what is in the LLC because that's an inside lawsuit. In other words, the harm occurred inside the LLC. Make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So in other words, we have to distinguish, are we talking about an outside lawsuit or an inside lawsuit? And so now let's consider an inside lawsuit because these are the ones that we're worried about. They can take everything in the LLC. Well, here are all the different variables. If you've got $100,000 of equity because of five properties with $20,000 of equity in each one, in one LLC, that's $100,000 of equity. Now, is that too much? Well, the answer is it depends on your net worth. If you have a $10 million net worth, who cares? It's not too much. If you have a $100,000 net worth, that's too much. You would want to separate those properties under those circumstances into probably separate LLCs. So does that make sense, Tracy?
Yes, that makes sense. We're just I'm a lot of people getting advice to set up all of these different LLCs, but what I'm hearing from you is that you have to set up the LLC correctly with the right charging orders. I mean, pardon my naivete here, to protect against these kinds of suits.
Well, that's correct. And then the going back to your original question is, do you have to put, you know, have one LLC for every property? And once again, the answer is they're trying to get at the right principle, which is insulating one property from another. But the question is that a economical way to go about doing things. And in most cases, it's not. You might want to have a few properties in each LLC, depending upon how much equity is in each LLC. Now, some of you may be wondering, well, wait a minute, you know, what if I've got a paid off property, it's worth $500,000 in an LLC, and there's all that equity in that one LLC, and that represents the bulk of my net worth. What do I do to protect from an inside lawsuit? And the short answer is equity strip. Refinance a property, pull as much equity out as you can, protect the equity in a charging order protected entity like a limited partnership, and then have minimal equity in that particular LLC so that your risk is as low as possible.
So what you're saying is, yes, that makes sense. You're saying you can actually refit, or, you know, you can redo it after the fact. I'm going to try and do it right from the get-go. But
yeah,
if,
oh, yeah,
say,
by all means.
Okay, all right. Okay, I get it. That makes total
sense.
Yeah,
far better to do it right from the start. It's a whole lot cheaper to do it the right way from the start than to have to go back and fix things.
Thank you. Great advice.
You bet, Tracy.
Up next, we have Marjean. Marjean, please state your question.
Sorry about that. I was muted. If I confuse you, I apologize in advance. Let's say that you have an umbrella LLC. Let's call that C, LLC number C. And underneath that LLC, you have two different LLCs that are managing partners of C. So you have A and B underneath C. Now, let's say that LLC A gets sued. Can that penetrate C and all the properties owned by the LLC C?
And let me clarify, it is A, the managing member of umbrella LLC number C?
Correct.
Okay. The manager has does not expose the LLC to liability. So in other words, if the manager itself is sued, the manager does not create liability for the LLC. That liability would be contained within LLC A. So it would not affect LLC C. Now, if the lawsuit bankrupted LLC A, you'd have to appoint a new manager of umbrella LLC, which is all called C. But otherwise, and by the way, if LLC A were also a member of LLC C, then you'd have to get a new member as well if it bankrupted it. But it would not create liability for the assets within LLC C or the umbrella LLC.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I appreciate your answer.
You bet.
Okay, Gene had another question. Gene, please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Can you discuss the role umbrella insurance plays in asset protection? If I had a tenant slip and fall, and if I understand correctly, the property has, when you have home insurance, that has a liability component in that. And if I had, say, umbrella insurance, that would also be, you know, cover the liability there?
Umbrella insurance is tricky, and it's also pretty misleading because it sounds like, you know, an umbrella, you know, just picture an umbrella, it's going to cover everything, right?
Uh-huh.
Right, Gene?
Yes.
And that's the concept? Yeah. The problem is it's like an umbrella with a lot of holes in it. And you, what you really got to do is check the exclusions in an umbrella policy. You notice that they're pretty cheap. You know, you can get a couple million, you know, dollars of umbrella coverage for, you know, a few hundred bucks.
Okay.
The reason it's that cheap is because there are lots and lots of exclusions. So you cannot assume
that your underlying premises liability is well, let me put it this way. You can't assume that your umbrella policy is going to cover everything that your underlying premises liability policy covers.
Okay.
Okay, so it, now, does that mean you shouldn't have it? No, it's cheap. Go ahead and get it, and you might be lucky enough to have additional coverage. So, yeah, use umbrella insurance, but don't assume that it's the end-all, be-all. It's really like an umbrella with lots and lots of holes, and it's not going to keep you dry in a rainstorm.
Got it. Okay. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Okay, Mike had another question. Mike, please state your question.
Yeah, hi. I got disturbed by your points about the amount of equity in an LLC. I have a property that I own free and clear with over $1 million equity in it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that I should refinance to get that equity out of it before I put it in an LLC?
No, I'm not giving any specific advice, but I am saying that one technique, in fact, one of the probably the most effective technique for reducing your potential exposure, if there were any kind of premises liability on that property, is to strip the equity to the extent you can, refinance the property, which reduces the equity often by 80% or more if you can get more out. Which would dramatically lower your liability exposure. So let's just assume, for sake of discussion, Mike, that it's $1 million of equity and you're able to get $800,000 out on a refinance and leaving $200,000 of equity. In a worst-case scenario, if there really were a tragic, maybe a fire and people died and, horrible things, and they took the property, as a result of a lawsuit, well, you're only out $200,000 now, as opposed to, the entire amount of equity. So the other approach is just insure like crazy, load it up with insurance if you don't want to refinance, over insure if you can. And those are really the basic techniques for properties. Go ahead.
The problem with refinancing, obviously, is the cost of the loan. I mean,
sure,
the expenses go up on the property quite significantly.
Yeah, that's why I'm not saying, I'm not giving any specific advice. I'm just offering that as a way to reduce your exposure in the event of an inside lawsuit. The other approach, which is, insuring more, isn't necessarily cheap either. It does raise costs too. So,
right.
it's a balance between what's the better economic approach in your particular case.
But with the LLC, I'm getting a bit confused here because I thought the whole point of setting up the LLCs and the appropriate structures was to avoid them being able to go after the asset.
Well, let me put it this way, it can be confusing. So let me reiterate because it helps to state it again. Let's say, Mike, that you are in a terrible car accident. It's your fault. They get $1 million judgment against you. They cannot touch your property in the LLC. It is completely protected by the charging order. You're merely a member of the LLC, and that's it. They get nothing. Okay, so in other words, the property is protected in an outside lawsuit. Okay, now let's also show you how it's going to protect you. The LLC protects because let's say there is a slip and fall on the property, and what that means is they could take what's in the LLC, but they could not take your personal assets. So if whatever personal assets you have, your home savings, life savings, et cetera, that is completely protected because even in an inside lawsuit where there's a slip and fall of the property, the liability is limited to whatever is in the LLC. So your personal assets are protected as well. All right? Now, that's okay. Small comfort, because we're really talking about $1 million of equity in this LLC, and there may be ways to very carefully look at that, and there might be some techniques to divide that property into different components, et cetera, and put it into separate LLCs to minimize the risk. But that's a third and more distant likelihood. So, in other words, the LLC does provide significant liability protections in a number of situations, but just not in every situation, not in the event of an inside lawsuit. But then the hope is you've got good insurance. The insurance is going to cover it. And in the event that the insurance, you know, either doesn't cover it, then you're exposed, or only covers it up to a certain amount, and you would be responsible for the amount over that. Well, at least there is some mitigation of the damage.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. Yep. No, that was
all right.
Good.
Okay. You bet.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, Gene had another question. Gene, please go ahead.
Hey there. So I'm curious.
Hi, Gene.
The gentleman who just had the last concern about the equity, would a HELOC also have suffice instead of refi?
Yeah, a HELOC is a possibility. The problem is that the HELOC is a potential, or is the right to take a loan. You know, you've got it all set up ahead of time. It doesn't mean you've actually pulled equity out of the property. But then the timing would be questionable. So let's say there's a terrible fire on the property, and the day after you pull, you know, you do a HELOC, you pull all the equity out that you can. Well, that would be undone, that removal of that equity, because you knew that a lawsuit would be coming, and that would be considered a fraudulent conveyance. So a court would undo that, would order you to put the equity back in under those circumstances. So a HELOC is good up until the point that the danger happens.
Got it. So even if you were using that HELOC to purchase other properties and you were paying it down and then buying others, then it would have been the timing of it.
Well, yeah, the timing is everything, because all the equity stripping, and that's a great approach, by the way, using a HELOC to, you know, take equity out of a property to go buy more properties. That's a completely valid approach, but it's only valid when there's no lawsuit on the horizon or no hint of a lawsuit on the horizon. And if, you know, there's a terrible slip and fall or a fire or any of these harms that occur, anything done after that to pull equity out would be undone by a court and ordered back in.
Okay, thank you. By the way, this has been
excellent
points.
Good, okay. Glad it's helpful.
Our last question for today's call comes from Laxley. Laxley, please go ahead.
Hello, Bob. I'm here in Texas, and I'm enjoying your presentation.
Good.
As an investor, we have, in my case, I just want to check on the residence, your private residence. Would you put that in a separate LLC? I mean, completely different from LLC that you're using for your investment?
Well, the fact that you told me you live in Texas, it means the answer for you in particular is no, because Texas has, along with Florida, are the only two states that have an unlimited homestead exemption, which means you could, and Mike, in your case, if you had $1 million home all paid off in Texas or Florida and someone sued you for $1 million and the home was in your name, they couldn't take your home because of the homestead protection of the state laws. In every other state, there are varying degrees of homestead exemption. None of them are complete like Texas and Florida. So in those states, There are a lot of different considerations you would have to weigh in order to decide whether to put the home into some kind of protective entity. Usually, you would lose some tax benefits in doing so, particularly the $500,000 capital gains tax exclusion when you sell the property. If you're married, it would be $250,000. If you sell and you're single, that goes away if the property is not in your name in 3 out of the last 5 years when you sell. So that's a consideration and a big one in a lot of states. And then there are other considerations as well. To the extent that the homestead exemption in your particular state provides some kind of a tax break, you would also lose that in putting it into the into an LLC. So once again, there are many, many factors to weigh in deciding whether to protect the home and in what way.
Okay. Great.
Okay.
I'm glad to be here.
But you being in Texas, you're fine.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet.
So, Bob, we really do appreciate it. I actually have a couple of questions that were emailed in. Do you mind answering those real quick?
I'm happy to. Yeah.
Okay. I have a question from Albert Potts. Albert writes, appreciate this. He said, I formed an S corporation 10 years ago. Do I need to form an LLC also?
Well, once again, I can't give any, you know, very specific personal advice, but let me just say this,
right,
that it depends on what is the S corp's purpose. What is its function? If it holds title to real estate, it would be more protected in an LLC. On the other hand, if it's a flipping company or wholesaling company, then probably an S corp is just fine under those circumstances. An S corp is a pass through entity, so that's a good tax election. And that means you're getting under the new tax law in 2018, you'll get an automatic 20% tax deduction from taxable income. So once again, it depends on if the property is in the S corp or if it's intended to hold title. It is possible in many states to convert a corporation such as an S corp to an LLC, but not in all states. In some states, you would have to dissolve the S corporation and then set up a brand new LLC. And if it holds title to property, you'd have to transfer the title to the property into the new LLC. And that's, you know, pretty cumbersome, questionable whether it's worth all the trouble.
So you hear that, Albert? I hope he answered your question for you. So, Bob, once again, I really do appreciate you taking the time to speak to our students today. I know you're really busy. For those of you who have not gotten your UP 2018 tickets, actually, Bob will be at 2018 with a booth, so you can come and talk to him, and he'll definitely be able to help you with any advice you have, any advice he may have as far as LLCs are concerned. That's correct, right, Bob?
That's correct.
All right. So once again, like I said, we really appreciate it, Bob. Any last words for any students out there?
No, but pleasure getting to talk with you all. And you all had very, very good questions. And I find that the students at RE Mentor are among the very best real estate investors in the country. And I think you're in exactly the right place, getting exactly the right mentoring. And I would congratulate all of you. You've found the right guy. The right guru, and that's Dave. He is the right guy. So, Jermaine, thank you very much. And
thank you very much
for talking with your students.
All right. Thank you very much, Bob. We appreciate it. Have a good one.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.